This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning, good morning. It is another Friday dawn in Kuala Lumpur, 7:07 in the morning, Friday the 10th of December. This is The Morning Run with me, Shazana Mokhtar. Not Wong Xiaoning, Ku Su Chuang. I'm looking at Ku Su Chuang and also Philip C.
Wrong Chinese person.
Oh my goodness. Xiaoning and Chuang look so different.
I mean, it's nothing to do with the looks. It's just, you know, muscle memory and who I imagine, who I expect to see in the mornings.
Shaz. Coffee is good.
You know what? That's a great recommendation. I will take you up on that offer, Chuang, after this. But first, though, as we always do, we start the morning with a look at how markets ended trading yesterday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
Okay, well, the Dow was closed flat. The S&P was down by 0.7%. The Nasdaq was down by 1.7%. And before that, in Asia, the Nikkei was down by half a percentage point. But the Hang Seng, the Shanghai Comp, the SDI, and the FBM KLCI all rose by between 0.4% to 1.5%.
All right. And joining us for insights into what's moving markets, we speak to Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong. Carlos, good morning. Now, while the jury is still out on the threat Omicron poses, which ASEAN economies and equity markets might be more vulnerable to the reintroduction of stricter containment measures?
Hi, good morning. So we are actually looking at this topic. I think it's very relevant right now. I would say that you need to consider it also in the context of Fed tapering, so which Asian economies are more exposed to potential sell-offs as a result of, you know, the reintroduction of stricter lockdown measures in the context of, you know, this Fed tapering that is ahead of us. And we find that domestic-oriented economies, where consumption accounts for a large proportion of GDP and where some imbalances on the external front may still persist, are more at risk. So in our list, we have countries like Philippines, but we also have Australia, Malaysia, and Thailand as the top countries that are potentially exposed to some outflows going forward as a result of slowing growth momentum and also tighter global liquidity due to the Fed.
But do you think all these knee-jerk reactions and, you know, immediate kind of closure of borders or even tighter restrictions will crimp demand than what was originally projected?
Mm-hmm. Well, the jury is still out, as you have very accurately said, in terms of what the impact of the variant will be on consumption. We have been saying that we need to wait until the scientific consensus is formed in order to be able to accurately predict what the potential economic scenarios will be. For the time being, we can only operate within the limits of what we know. And we know that countries are overreacting to the news. They are implementing some restriction measures that is going to be felt in activity in Q4. It will be felt more strongly in Europe, because remember, in Europe, they are going from a situation where travel is very much liberalized. That's not the case in Asia, to being back under lockdown, and people are back to working from home versus working in the office. So the impact will be felt more strongly in Europe in the fourth quarter, not so much in Asia. But if we do have an outbreak in Asia, then that will be in Q1, and then it will affect these economies. However, the jury is still out. We still don't know how deadly the new variant is and whether it will lead to hospitalization rates or whether it's a more muted version of Alpha.
Yeah, and Carlos, I just wonder whether there's going to be any impact on money markets, because China Evergrande and another company called Kaisar have officially defaulted on their dollar debt. What are your impressions of that?
The situation surrounding Chinese developers is one of the reasons why we have seen the PBOC actually signaling more strongly that they will reintroduce cyclical support. Of course, earlier this week, they actually delivered liquidity by reducing the reserve requirement ratio by 50 basis points. That, in our opinion, was a continuation of the existing stance, because you know, it's effective on December 15, and on the same day, there's a large volume of policy loans that are maturing. So they need to do it in order to ensure that liquidity is stable, as you have these developers that are incurring some financial distress. Going forwards, I think they will continue to monitor the situation, but it is possible that we will see actually a change in stance by the PBOC towards more easing as a result of all of the uncertainties that are piling for the global economy. And of course, as China enters a slower phase in its post-recovery narrative, they will have to introduce cyclical support if they want to achieve their growth targets next year.
Exactly, Carlos, because, you know, we always hear that China wants to adopt this cross-cyclical approach, isn't it? Taking action sooner, in smaller steps, with a longer time frame in mind. Do you think that strategy and stance is going to shift as a result of this? Is that just a tweak or really a fundamental shift then?
Right. No, we are seeing a shift towards ensuring liquidity is stable and with perhaps more of an easing bias. Cross-cyclical means that they will only do minor adjustments to ensure stable liquidity between cycles, right? It's the whole point. So you had a tightening in the first half of this year. We expect to see easing in 2022. And now we're in this, still in this cross-cyclical situation whereby it's only minor tweaks to liquidity. But we will see more of these types of actions in order to ensure that liquidity remains stable. And as they implement easing on the domestic front, that will also probably exert some pressure on the currency, which, of course, is one of the strongest performers in the world year to date against the strong US dollar.
And looking at a trend that's affecting other parts of the world, namely inflation, China's CPI jumped 2.3% in November. This is the fastest pace since August 2020. Is this because of a base effect or is it signs of runaway inflation?
In my opinion, it's both. So, you know, the same developments you're observing in Malaysia are happening in China. There's a lot of food inflation, especially on vegetable prices, because there is a demand is slowly starting to pick up. There's a global disruption there as well, so prices are up, and people are gearing and hoarding food, gearing up to potential lockdowns over the winter months in case this Omicron variant becomes a risk. So as a result of that, we've seen a lot of food price inflation in China, and that is compounding with all of the important inflation from the higher commodity prices, etc., leading to that spike in inflation of 2.3%. Now, there is another factor that has started to play a role, which is that base effect, but it's not manifested itself fully yet. So, you know, prices of meat in China are very low because of the base effect surrounding African swine fever. That phases out in 2022. So inflation is already 2.3%. You can imagine that going forward, it will only increase from here onwards due to that base effect.
And staying on the inflation theme, the US is going to announce its inflation figures today. I think it's much anticipated. Markets already are showing a bit of tension to it. What's your expectation, core and headline, and how breadth is the inflation going to be?
So we do expect that inflation will eventually face some downside pressures at some point in the second half of next year. I think a lot of people are starting to consider the aftermath of peak inflation in the context of Omicron and this impact. Unfortunately, however, the print this week will be higher than expected again, and it will continue to fuel talks about Fed tapering. Inflation is still going to peak before we see that downside pressure. And unfortunately, the Fed is in a bit of a conundrum because they said inflation above 2% and unemployment below 5%. And those conditions have been met. So following from the print this week, inevitably, there's going to be more talk about, three rate hikes or how many rate hikes in 2022. But of course, remember that some of the factors that are underpinning strong inflation this year will play the inverse role in the second half of next year. So we do expect this to be a longer transitory phase in inflation. But central banks, nonetheless, they still have to react to higher prices because this is their core mandate. And so it will entail some degree of policy tweaking on the behalf of the Fed.
All right, Carlos, thanks as always for the chat. That was Carlos Casanova, senior economist at UBP in Hong Kong, capping our conversation with expectations for the inflation rate that will be announced later later today in the US. He's thinking it's probably going to be higher than expected, sparking that round of talks about when will the Fed taper, when will interest rates hike, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's going to be quite intuitive. But as with every playbook, there's always a silver lining, right? There's always when it's up, there's always a down. And I want to point out the fact that the silver lining here, right? And we talked about this inflation, fertilizer prices going through the roof. Well, as a result, manure prices are basically dung or poop from animals of all manner of color and stripe on the farm. Well, that market is going berserk, right? So the green markets, North American Fertilizer Price Index is at an all-time high. So, well, as opposed to letting it hit the fan, maybe you might want to scoop it up and sell it on the markets.
Well, I think that's... Well, we had this conversation about higher fertilizer prices last week, and it is a confluence of many factors,
of course, yeah.
Chuang. It's also driven by the fact that, you know, there are actually import curbs being taking place in China because the three core elements of fertilizer, potassium, nitrate, and the other one I can't remember, potash, I think, they're basically also having all these supply chain constraints. So while I think you imply that there is going to be, this is good, right, for a certain segment, it's a really small segment, but many of us across the value chain are suffering as a result of higher food prices.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And if you want to listen to that conversation, you can check out the podcast, Fertilizer Driving Food Prices. We spoke to Chris Lawson, head of fertilizers at CRU Group. It's really interesting to see the, interactions between how fertilizer affects what we eat and et cetera, et cetera.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with The Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.